Nerds, you're listening to an episode on the Nerdcore podcast feed. If you're feeling generous, please consider pledging to a tier on our Patreon at patreon.com/thenerdcore. We have tiers as low as $1 per month. Thanks so much, and enjoy the episode!
This is episode 249, and it is your nerd news for the week. As always, you know, it's the Nerdy Chicano here to host the show, alongside my wonderful co-host, Young Yoda.
Hello, everybody. Back.
Yeah.
Back in the saddle again.
Back in the saddle again, my friends. And to the Patreon supporters, I'm so sorry we could not put up a mini pod. Man, it's been a really crazy weekend, but I wouldn't want it any other way.
I mean, maybe next time I'll just put something up, like a 10 seconds of me screaming or something.
Screaming into the void?
Screaming into the void, yes.
Yeah.
I'm sure they'll love that. We'll lose all support.
Yeah. Started production on my second documentary. Footage has been turned into Alex to start editing, so we're gonna get around here and start releasing some new stuff for you guys for the film stuff. Patreon supporters, you know you guys are gonna get that stuff, but just wanted to provide you all with an update of sorts.
Oh, you gotta tell them about your talk with Shane.
Oh yeah, it's up. I started my first rounds of promoting the podcast. And I believe next week Colton's podcast with me will be up. But this week Shane's is already up. And you guys should already be able to listen to it.
And you should be able to listen to my interview with him on it. Because, you know, that's how we do. We got to promote the host.
Yeah. It's my show. So I better get my promotion, right?
It's his show. He can cry if he wants to.
Yeah. All right, man. It's a crazy, crazy week. Weekend, but nothing could stop the news from being this crazy either, especially with the breaking one, man. This is big. I mean, I know Bond 25 is a really, really hectic production, but like I've told Brad, like, it's honestly my top three most anticipated of 2020, and I think it just skyrocketed to possibly number two now because of this. So Bamic Boy on Twitter puts an exclusive: "Hello, Mr. Waltz. We've been expecting you. Christoph Waltz is back as Blofeld in 007 Bond 25, shooting scenes in Pinewood Studios. When a visitor spotted him, Waltz insisted, 'You haven't seen me.'" So this was a report that came up, man, and that, you know, that Waltz was spotted at Pinewood Studios, where Bond 25 is filming. So, Brad, I mean, this is huge, man. Waltz coming back for Bond 25. Yeah. What do you make of that?
Christoph Waltz back again as one of the villains. This just makes me wonder what Rami Malek will be doing. Even more.
What if Rami Malek is kind of like pulling the strings on everybody?
It's a possibility. I'm still going for he's like the computer scientist, computer terrorist.
Yeah.
That's where I think I see him fitting, because we haven't seen that since GoldenEye.
Yeah. So this is awesome, man. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Christoph Waltz, but I was a huge fan of Blofeld in those movies, man. And I think this is going to be incredible, dude. I can't wait to see what he's going to bring back. And it's incredible how anticipation I have for this film. Even though, you know, it has been a rocky production to it.
Did you hear about the new Bond news that just came out today, Ro?
What?
Coming from the Daily Beast, British actress Lashana Lynch will reportedly become the next 007, the first woman ever to take on the debonair secret agent's code name.
That is interesting. Yeah.
I sent you the link.
Yeah, I think that's really interesting. I think that would be a new... That would be a very interesting new take on it, man. One thing is...
And this brings up a lot of... There's a little bit of confusion because they don't know if she's the next James Bond or she's just taking on the codename 007.
Yeah.
So it's kind of up in the air right now what exactly is going on.
Honestly, if you can't get Elba, I think that's the best way, the best move you can make.
I think that's kind of cool, actually.
Yeah.
The route they're going.
Yeah, I think that's a really, really cool route that they could go, man. But yeah, dude, the Bond 25, it's shaping up to be something pretty interesting, dude. And I can't wait to see what that'll bring next year. But for now, as always, we'll keep on reporting about that stuff. But it's also about something that's been crazy this weekend was also the box office, man. Holy crap. Not what I expected at all, Brad.
Yeah, that's an understatement.
Yeah. So bottom five, dude. I am absolutely happy with Midsommar still having a good number there with $3,551,571.
Yeah, it's still surprising Men in Black's holding on because they've been falling off pretty quickly.
Men in Black, bro? Then, freaking Aladdin. Aladdin's still holding on, dude.
Yeah, I mean, Aladdin's falling out of the top five, though. With when we talk about that, we'll talk about number five.
Yeah. Still kicking, man. That is incredible that Aladdin's still kicking. But and I told you there's no way that three Disney movies still are in the top 10. I was wrong. What's it called? Spider-Man, Toy Story, and Aladdin are still making a big hit.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah. And so is our number five, dude. I am shocked. I mean, this is the effect of what AMC is doing with their thing, you know, kind of giving more promotion to the smaller films and allowing them to stay on longer. So yesterday is at number five with $6,750,000. Stuber is at number four with $8,043,000. It debuted this weekend. That's the Kumail Nanjiani film with Dave Bautista. And then we have at number three debuting this weekend as well was Crawl with $12 million, which I got to watch at least 75% of that film today. And I got to say, I really enjoyed what I was watching, dude. And then at number two, we have Toy Story 4 with $20,665,000. And of course, at number one again this weekend with $45,300,000, Spider-Man Far From Home.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, look, this weekend, the box office is going to have a huge shift. But, dude, this is incredible. I mean, Crawl and yesterday are big takeaways from here. I can't believe yesterday's still kicking. And I can't believe that a freaking low-level, but low-budget, $50 million, if I'm correct, $50 million budget film like Crawl was able to make $12 million at the box office this weekend.
Well, that's what it's all about. These studios are figuring out low-budget, good movie. And get your money's worth, especially in the horror genre. That's what they're going toward. I mean, this is more of a thriller, but it is reminiscent of the way horror movies work.
Yeah, because what's it called? Because Raimi is a producer on it, so Raimi's a horror guy.
And really, Crawl didn't have that much, you know, promotion in my eyes. I really didn't see it very. I saw it before Spider-Man Far From Home at my theater, but that was a small local theater, so.
Yeah.
Other than that, I really haven't seen much for Crawl. And then, yesterday actually moving up into the top five on its, I think, third week now. Very surprising.
Yeah, I'm so happy for yesterday, man. I'm glad that Danny Boyle is having a successful film at the moment. So hopefully it keeps on being the same way next weekend. But next weekend's going to have a crazy weekend, man. Oh, my God. We have
Lion King's about to drop on everyone's head.
Yeah, dude. I'm gonna go ahead and search up on the box office tracking for Lion King, but I am pretty sure it's up in like the 100,000s, man.
Maybe 100 millions.
Oh, I'm sorry. No more 100,000s, right?
No, we did that to Thor. Did not work out well.
Maybe 100,000 per fucking theater, dude. Dude, those are great times of what's it called? The throwback to the early days of the podcast.
Yeah.
I that's so fucking funny, dude. I still can't.
Yeah, what was Thor Ragnarok, and we said like 800,000.
Yeah.
And then it came out at like 130 million or some shit. It's
we're so fucking wrong here. Yeah.
What the fuck?
Little peas in the podcasting pot, man. Look, we have Lion King. Oh, my God. It's actually tracking to a $201 million.
$201 million.
Mm-hmm.
Whew.
I'm gonna say what I told you on the last off air. $230 million for sure. That's it, man. $230 million. It's gonna make a record, man.
Well, what was Endgame?
Oh, when I say record, I mean for these live actions.
No. I mean, what was Endgame though? Opening.
300 and something.
Okay. That's believable.
Let me check. Just gonna do a little check here. By the way, Endgame is $8 million away from passing Avatar.
Yeah, it fell off to number, I believe, 12 mm-hmm. or 13.
Endgame's opening weekend was $357,115,000. $15.
You know, if I was Disney, I would just buy up just a shit ton of tickets.
Oh, man.
Just over in China somewhere.
Yeah.
Be like, yeah, we totally won.
I want to see the numbers for what's the best opening weekend for these live action remakes. Well, it's not live action this one, but I mean, you know what I mean.
Well, you know it's not Dumbo.
Oh, good Lord, no.
Probably Aladdin at this point.
I think so too, man. Disney live actions, reimaginings. Okay, so 174 for Beauty and the Beast, 103 for Jungle Book, 116 for Alice in Wonderland, 91 million for Aladdin, and yeah, that's kind of it, man. Yeah. So the number to beat is 174 million from Beauty and the Beast in 2017. I think this makes it, man. I'm calling it right now. $230 million. What's it called? Opening weekend.
Yeah, I agree. $230 million.
$230 million.
Yeah, I mean, a little over makes sense, especially for the Lion King.
Yeah. So that'll be number one. Spider-Man: Far From Home at number two. Toy Story 4 at number three. Crawl at number four. And then Yesterday at number five. I think Stuber's gonna fall off.
Can I just say how weird it is that I went to see the original Lion King in theaters and now, like, 25 years later, it's back?
Yeah. Well, you know who's necessarily not back, but he is joining the cast of Space Jam 2?
Don Cheadle.
Yeah. I was going to try to say the name of his name in from Boogie Nights, but I can't remember his name in Boogie Nights. But what's it called? I was gonna say his name is Clarence, but that's Anthony Mackie. That's not Cheadle. So, according to Deadline.com, Don Cheadle jumps into Warner Brothers Space Jam 2 from Anthony D'Alessandro. Exclusive, coming off the second highest grossing film of all time, Avengers Endgame. Don Cheadle is joining LeBron James in Warner Brothers Space Jam 2, which is currently in production. Terrence Nance is directing the follow-up 1996 movie, which grossed over $230 million at the box office. Global box office, the pick is seen as a reboot of the studio's classic Looney Tunes cable stable. Cheadle's role is being kept under wraps. Most recently, Cheadle starred in the... Okay, yeah. And also, it does not mention here that Coogler wrote the script for this. LeBron James would go on to say that they're actually filming scenes right now. So, Brad, this is coming in July 16, 2021. Do you think that this is, do you think that really Don Cheadle benefits from Space Jam 2? Or do you think that, like, it's too early to tell yet?
I mean, Don Cheadle doesn't need any help in any acting department, so.
No, I know, but I mean, like.
If he wants to play this role, I mean, good for him. My guess is he's going to be playing like the Bill Murray was to Jordan. That's my guess.
Yeah. So he's going to be, what's it called, Bill Murray, but to LeBron James.
Yeah, that's my guess. I mean, I can't see him in what other role he would be in.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just excited for, you know, to see Space Jam 2, dude, because I love Space Jam 1.
I mean, Space Jam 1 was great. I don't know how a 2 will work, but, you know, it'd be cool to, I guess, see the Looney Tunes again.
Yeah, dude. What's up, Doc?
Wesley Webbit.
I'm hunting for wabbits. Yeah, well, we were having a really nice conversation before about, you know, The Lion King. And the Tomato Meter was finally revealed from Rotten Tomatoes for The Lion King. And, yep, I can't say I didn't expect this one, Brad. Definitely did not expect this.
Well, you were messaging me on Twitter like, dude, this shit's weird. And I'm like, Talking Animals is weird in general, man. And I'm like,
but
like, I know it looks weird because it's fucking Talking Animals. What do you want?
No, it's just that it's, what's it called? My fear is exactly what I was hearing people talk about, man. You know, it's, what's it called? That it feels hollow and that it doesn't even play the Shakespearean elements from the original film.
It's following everything from the original film. So it's not a new movie. I knew that was going to happen. They're going to get lazy and they're going to be like, meh.
Yeah.
Here's a live action what we already made.
Yeah.
Well, eat it up.
Well, here, let's go ahead and read off. It is currently sitting at a 59% on Rotten Tomatoes, guys. And let me go ahead and read some reviews here, man. I'm gonna do fresh ones and rotten ones, guys. Don't think I'm just going to read the rotten ones because I'm a terrible person like that. There is plenty of wonder on offer in this Lion King, but little imagination. A 2 out of 4 from critic Barry Hertz from Globe and Mail. Michael O'Sullivan from the Washington Post says, yes, this movie is a safari to the Shadowland. And it's just deep enough to give a cat who's come of age something to sink his teeth into. 3.5 out of 4. Dana Stevens from Slate says, pairing off romantically to produce a legitimate heir to the throne is nice and all, but it's getting destroyed by the minions of your own virile ambition. That's the real circle of life. And no score for that, actually. Damn, that one was a kind of a hard one, man.
Harsh. That was harsh. Jesus.
A well-rendered but creatively bankrupt self-portrait of a movie studio eating its own tail. Rating is a D from IndieWire's David Elrich.
Ouch.
The exact same stuff happens as before. Now, though, it looks like David Attenborough uncovered a secret species of singing lion and lent them to Disney for it. A 3 out of 5 from Simon Miraudo from Student Edge.
Man, I guess it tells you the graphics are good.
Beautifully crafted and carefully conceived without ever entirely justifying its existence. So you might feel the love tonight, but perhaps not quite as much as before. 3 out of 5 from Helen O'Hara from Empire Magazine. And I'm going to
pick... That one makes sense. That's the one we've been saying.
And I'm going to go ahead and read the last one here. This is the Lion King's greatest strength, but it's also its greatest weakness, as by trying to make the Savannah as accurate as possible, the Disney film seems to forget what we loved about the 1995 original. Rating 3 out of 5 from Samuel Spencer over at Daily Express UK. So, look, man, I don't think this is going to affect the box office at all, dude. Nostalgia knows no bounds, man. And people are going to go watch this.
Nope.
Mm-hmm.
Sure don't.
Especially because we're almost done with July, which means that we're going to get close to going back to kids going back to school, man. So, you know, they're going to want to go watch the movies, and this is going to be one of the movies that they're going to want to watch.
Yeah, same reason they released Spider-Man when they did.
Mm-hmm.
You gotta get that kid money. All I want, though, from this is I want a blooper reel where Seth Rogen just says all of Nala's lines. That's all I want.
Look, man, I'm not going to watch this. I'm probably going to watch it later until it hits Disney Plus or Dollar Theater. I don't know. But, I mean, this is... I expected this. I want to say I expected this. But I didn't expect for it to be a 59%. That's for sure. I did not expect a 59%. I thought it was going to be like a 60 or a 70.
You know, ever since Incredibles 2, any of these kind of like remakes, reimaginings, or sequels from these movies that are over 10 to 14 years old, I expect this. I expect just not to get something that I love anymore. It's just kind of a way to make a little bit of extra pocket change for Disney, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. All right,
except for Wreck-It Ralph.
Yeah, Wreck-It Ralph 2.
That shit was good.
Yeah, that's on Netflix, right?
Yeah, it's on Netflix.
Nice. So we have another story here from Variety. And yeah, this is really interesting, man. So Dave Bautista's STX comedy My Spy pushed to 2020. For an exclusive from Variety.com from Matt Donnelly. Dave Bautista's action comedy My Spy has been moved off of its August 23rd release date. Numerous individuals familiar with the film studio STX Films told Variety, the family-centric tale about a hardened CIA operative and his unlikely 9-year-old psychic is seeking a new date in the first quarter of 2020. It could open as early as January, one of the insiders said. An STX spokesperson had no comment. Footage from the project, which is directed by Peter Segal, second act, The Longest Yard, played well to a movie theater owners at CinemaCon in April and drew comparisons to the Arnold Schwarzenegger. Kindergarten Cop, I'm sorry, to the crap. Producers and the studio are said to have full faith in the film, but wanted time between this and the buddy comedy Stuber, which opens Friday and also co-stars Bautista. So, you know, this kind of sucks, man, because I was looking way more towards this than Stuber.
Well, I think it's a question of, as of right now, can Dave Bautista hold a film on his own? Can he be a big draw? I think he can. I don't know if he can right now. But to me, I've always said I think he's a better actor than The Rock.
Oh, yeah.
The Rock is far more popular. I think maybe a few more years, a few better movies under his belt. Mm-hmm. And we can, you know, see him be able to garner a lot more attention for these films. And because everything I've seen him in so far, he's been great. And Stuber's kind of mixed, at least on Rotten Tomatoes. Critics give it 46%. Audience give it 81%. So it's hard to tell what's going on there, but it had a lackluster box office opening to $8 million. So, I mean, it's hard to tell exactly why they pushed it back, but I do feel like they pushed it back because Stuber didn't open very well.
Yeah. I think that they're gonna hold it off, but I think that My Spy has a better chance of doing better than Stuber.
I think if they market it right, Stuber to me wasn't marketed very well. I saw it like one time. I forget if on YouTube or where exactly. Mm. But other than that, I never really saw Stuber marketed anywhere. Other than the actors going on like Hot Ones and all that.
Yeah. Or what's it called? The Kumail Nanjiani going to Monday Night Raw and just having a shirt with Dave Bautista's head on it.
Wait, yeah, you need to watch the Hot Ones. Because he goes in on, like, he was looking at one of the tables on Monday Night Raw, and he's going, oh, those don't look very sturdy. And then Bautista slams through. He's like, oh, okay, I understand now.
Yeah, well, this next piece of news is really, really interesting. Everybody knows that, what's his name, that David Fincher does the Mindhunter series for Netflix. So he's not, what's it called, what's the word I'm trying to say? He's not new to working with Netflix. By the way, season 2 comes out on August 16th. I'm very hyped for that, but I didn't want to put that in the news. But this piece of news is really, really interesting. Because David Fincher, Gary Oldman team for Netflix biopic on Citizen Kane's screenwriter from Justin Kroll over at Variety. David Fincher has signed on to direct his first feature film since 2014. A biopic revolving around Citizen Kane screenwriter Herman Mankiewicz, and Gary Oldman is tapped to play the titular role. The film titled Mank is based on a script by Fincher's late father, Jack, who had penned the script prior to his death in 2003. Specific plot details are vague, but sources say the story will follow Mankiewicz's tumultuous development of the script for Citizen Kane, which would go on to be considered one of the best films of all time alongside director Orson Welles. Despite the film's critical success, the script was only part of the film to win an Oscar. And also, it's going to be shot in black and white with production scheduled to begin in November. This is huge, man, because what's it called? If people know about this controversy, there's a controversy as to who even wrote this script. And this is the script to one of the greatest movies ever made in the history of cinema overall. So it's going to be...
If I remember right, though, Raul, didn't you call it overrated, I think?
I said that it's dated.
It's dated. And it is. It's very dated.
But the objectivist in me has to say it's one of the greatest movies of all time ever made. You know, just like Casablanca, The Godfather, Vertigo. So, you know, it's...
Agreed.
Yeah. Like, you just look at the effect of cinema overall. A lot where cinema is right now is because of films like Citizen Kane.
No question. And Gary Oldman playing the title character. I'm watching this.
Oh, 100%. Especially in black and white. Imagine they do a 4:3 aspect ratio, Brad.
But plus, I always like a good biography or history movie.
When it's done right. This sounds
like right up my alley.
Mm-hmm. When it's done right, dude. This is the next piece of news is some sad news here, man. But I'm gonna go ahead and continue on with movies that now I'm looking forward to. I was very much looking forward to this movie, dude. The test screenings that were coming out for this movie were saying that Amy Adams would win an Oscar with this one, but it looks like it's being moved to 2020. From Hollywood Reporter, by Rebecca Keegan. Amy Adams' Woman in the Window to move to 2020 as Disney retools Fox film. The final movie from the shuttering Fox 2000 division and an adaptation of hit book from producer Scott Rudin will get reshoots after test screenings revealed audiences were confused. When production began in New York last August, The Woman in the Window seemed like the rarest of Hollywood properties, a grown-ups movie with both box office potential and an awards pedigree. Based on best-selling 2018 novel by A.J. Finn and starring six-time Oscar nominee Amy Adams as an agoraphobic child psychologist who witnesses a crime, the Fox 2000 thriller had been set to open on October 4th, a prime date for awards movies and commercial day adult fairs such as Gone Girl. Now Disney, which acquired the Fox film Empire in March, will move Woman in the Window out of 2019 and retool the picture. Including reshoots, The Hollywood Reporter has learned the looming date change comes as the Burbank studio is digesting Fox's slate, troubleshooting on the film inherited and setting a fall awards strategy. So a twisty mystery with a third act reveal and large chunks set inside the mind of Adams' depressed character, Woman in the Window has proven a challenging adaptation for director Joe Wright and producer Scott Rudin. Multiple sources tell that THR, the thriller, which also stars Gary Oldman and Julianne Moore, and which Tracy Letts adapted for the screen, confused early test audiences. I'm going to go ahead and post something for you, man. What's it called? Would you have wanted this movie to get retooled or Ad Astra?
From what I saw in Ad Astra, that shit looked freaking good. So I don't know.
Do you think this is Disney trusting Ad Astra more?
From what it sounds like, yes. I mean, it sounds like they thought the writer or the director couldn't handle what this movie was trying to show. And I mean, it sounds like what they need to do is dig Ingmar Bergman back up to come direct this thing.
Yeah, it's... I'm really sad, man, because I really, really was looking forward to this movie. I'm a big fan of Amy Adams, but you know, something like this was really interesting to see her take on with this next role. And it looks like we're gonna have to wait for 2020 and see if it even can, you know.
Well, and I guess the good thing is they're not giving up on it. They're not just shelving it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it sounds like they will eventually release it as a theatrical release, but. I'll just say it. I mean, just like Persona, sometimes the movies are just confusing. And if the movies are confusing to us, who are regular, you know, movie watchers and reviewers, the
critics,
imagine what it is for the public.
Yeah.
Just the regular public coming in and seeing and going, show them Persona and see. Like, we could follow it to a point, and then it's just like,
yeah,
I don't know what's going on. There's a dick up there. Man.
Yeah, well, there was that one guy who tweeted me what he thought Persona was about. And it's like, it's about abortion. And I'm like, really? I looked at the analysis. I looked at the analysis. It was really interesting, really intelligent analysis.
Yeah, I mean, I read that too when you posted that. I'm like, I'm thinking about it, like, it kind of makes sense, but
yeah.
Is that an actual kind of, like, it's one of, this is probably like one, probably like just like Persona, where there's, you can make a ton of interpretations on it, but unless, like I said, we dig up Ingmar Bergman, we're never going to know.
Yeah, we'll never know. So that's that with the women in the window. Look, I really do think that Disney is just putting a lot of trust in Ad Astra. I think that I think that's the one that they're gonna push hard for award season this year. But it does kind of, you know, it does sadden me that we're not gonna get to see this movie.
But what from what we see from Ad Astra, that is a far easier movie to follow.
Yeah,
it's pretty simple. Like, send Brad Pitt into space to find his dad who time travel or something going on there.
Yeah, it looks really interesting, man. I think that's going to be one of the ones that they're going to push for Best Picture, probably. Depending on
it looks,
how it is.
Yeah, it looks beautiful. So. Yeah,
it's one that I can't wait to watch, man. It's one of my anticipated this year as well.
I mean, you like your sci-fis and your space movies.
Yeah, I know. But I also like my you know, my horrors, like The Lighthouse, and we still don't have a freaking date for that.
You know, I like my romantic comedies.
All right. Well, Netflix takes Red Notice. Ryan Reynolds joins Dwayne Johnson and Gal Gadot in Rossin Marshall Thuber directed global heist film from Deadline.com's Mike Fleming Jr. Look, before I even read this, we had a story last week where we talked about Netflix not wanting to spend as much money on these films anymore. And this movie that they're going to bring now, Red Notice, it is their most expensive film they've done yet. But
well, that's just Netflix proving they don't listen to their own advice.
Yeah, but I mean, I feel like they think that it's gonna be a big, you know, a success because you have, you know, The Rock, Gal Gadot, and Ryan Reynolds. But let's go ahead and read this here. Netflix has just locked in what is arguably its biggest commitment to a feature film. In a dramatic switch of distributors for a tentpole size stars package, Netflix has greenlit and set a 2020 production start for the Rossin Marshall Thuber directed and scripted Red Notice. The film is a globetrotting action heist thriller that moves from Universal Pictures and has added Ryan Reynolds and to star alongside Dwayne Johnson and Gal Gadot. The latter two were attached when Universal acquired the project as a pitch early following a ferocious bidding battle last year, one where Netflix was runner-up. After Thuber drafted his pitch into a screenplay with a budget, the filmmaker sensed hesitation from Universal in a meeting late last month. Even though the studio had dated the picture for November 13, 2020, sources said the original pitch deal had specific progress to production timeline clauses. And when the window opened, Thuber's finished script was shown to Netflix 10 days ago. Led by head of film Scott Stuber, Netflix committed to everything the filmmakers delivered and gets a big picture on its slate. And it's anchored by three global franchise carrying stars who had tailored their schedules to make the production work in a specific time frame. The complex deal was also brokered during the holiday break. This means two things, Brad. By the way, the budget is supposed to be $130 million. This means two things. Netflix has money to throw where they can greenlit anything they want, and they might just even make it back.
Mm-hmm.
And two, The Rock is filming this before he does Black Adam.
Hmm.
I have a feeling.
Yeah.
I have a huge feeling.
So we'll probably see Black Adam in 2022 then.
Mm-hmm. Because 2021 is going to be the Batman. So yeah. This must mean that Black Adam in 2022, Shazam 2 probably in 2023.
Yeah, and kind of makes sense, especially with everything they're coming out with for DC. That does kind of make sense to me. Kind of sucks because I'm really looking forward to Black Adam.
Me too.
I was kind of hoping to get that sooner than later, but, you know, worth the wait.
Yeah.
And also, with this cast, I mean, I'm just playing it in my mind. I'm like, okay, The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, Gal Gadot. And I keep thinking of Blade for some reason with Wesley Snipes. Or Blade 3, sorry. Blade Trinity or whatever the fuck it was.
Blade Trinity, yeah.
Wesley Snipes and Ryan Reynolds and how well that worked. Now I'm just thinking Rock, Ryan Reynolds, except Rock has an actual personality. So like it can only go up from there.
Yeah. Yeah, dude.
And the only reason I like Blade Trinity is because Ryan Reynolds was a pain in the ass to Wesley Snipes the whole time.
Oh, God. Gotta love
it. And then you have Gal Gadot in it, which this is dope. So yeah. I will be watching this. I mean, I'm not going to lie. It's not like Hobbs and Shaw where I'm just like, I didn't watch The Meg. I don't care about Jason Statham punching sharks or rocks. I don't care. But this one actually sounds kind of good.
I'm going to tell you what I told Michelle when she said if I'm going to watch Adam's Family. Just like with Oscar Isaac, I will watch Gal Gadot eat an apple on screen for an hour. I don't care. I love them. You know, this is
I've been captivated the whole time.
Yeah, they're great actors. I'll watch them in anything. Like, I'll watch a movie where they're eating apple for an hour. I'll watch Oscar Isaac peel a banana for an hour, dude. I don't care. You know? Whoa. So I'll do the same thing with Gal Gadot. So I'm watching this because I just love this cast.
I mean, and let me just say, I didn't like Triple Frontier. Mm-hmm. But I still would have watched that because it had Ben Affleck, had the rest of the cast.
Yeah.
And you it's know, also I would have watched that anyway.
It's also really accessible. So, like, you know, you don't have to go to the theater and, you know, pay, what's it called, your $10 to watch the movie. Just bring it up on your Netflix. You're going to watch it. You know, it's fine. Like,
this just proves to me, like you said, Netflix just has a lot of money to burn if they want. Hell, they just had the biggest show pretty much on television, Stranger Things Season 3, come out with, like, what, 40 million viewers or something? Something fucking ridiculous. Mm-hmm. They're not needed for money. I think they just came out with, like, we're going to trim the budget just because, like, they know some of the shit they probably spend too much money on.
Yeah, but when it comes to The Rock, Ryan Reynolds, and Gal Gadot, you don't just not go for it, man. I think that would be, it would have been a huge swing and a miss.
Yeah, and I mean, just these three actors' names alone, that's going to get me to watch. Because I want to see Ryan Reynolds and The Rock just trading barbs at each other.
Yeah. Yeah. So another company that basically has money to burn is Disney. And it was interesting what a specific person called Jon Favreau had to say on Jimmy Kimmel Live. So just going to go ahead and give you guys the breakdown. Basically, Jon Favreau said that he's done writing season 2 of The Mandalorian and he's already started some pre-production on it. That is very interesting. And that tells me one thing, Brad. Disney is really confident in their streaming service.
Yeah, well, especially when it comes to Star Wars. Mm-hmm. I mean, you could have Chewbacca sitting down taking a squat and people will tune in for that.
Yeah, basically, I would tune in for that.
Yeah, I mean, Chewie taking a shit. Yeah, I think everybody would watch that.
Chewie and the porgs around a bonfire.
I would just say Jon Favreau, I will watch him make grilled cheese. I've done it. I will watch whatever the fuck he puts on the screen.
Yeah. At this point, you're not really worried about much, right?
No. It's Jon Favreau. I will watch. And I really hope in person Jon Favreau is like the nicest guy because he just seems like the nicest guy.
Yeah.
He's got like that Seth Rogen appeal to me. Just, you know, I would love to meet them in person because they're probably really down to earth and cool dudes. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I know Mandalorian's going to be a success. There's really no question that they would green light a second one. Mm-hmm. Let's face it. Star Wars, dude looks like Boba Fett. We're going to watch it. No duh. Mm-hmm. You already got the fanboys interested. Mm-hmm. So yeah, let Jon Favreau make his freaking chef show and also do the Mandalorian.
Dude, if this just means 10 to 13 more episodes of Pedro Pascal, I don't care. This is another one. I'll watch him eat a freaking apple. I don't care.
Exactly. So we're going to watch Pedro Pascal eat a grilled cheese sandwich, right?
Yeah, that's... Oh, okay. Yeah, but grilled cheese sandwich made by Jon Favreau. And then,
perfect.
And then I'm like, you know, I'm George in the background, and, you know, I'm just going to be, yeah, I'm drinking,
Mandalorians! No, George, Mandalorian.
We're going to be finding out about, And that's the thing. I don't know about the Mandalorians.
No, George, Mandalorians.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry, Brad. But it's because I really, really want. I thought about the Mandalorians, and that's what was going to be the next.
No, George, Mandalorians.
No, you know
what? I can see how that conversation goes.
Yeah. No. I mean, want to go? You can do a season two and make it about the Mandalorians if you want. I mean,
George, how much did you get paid for this?
Nice set visit, and I met Mr. I met David Benioff and D.B. Wise.
George, we paid you $6 billion to get the fuck out.
All right, I'll be leaving. By the way, every day, George Lucas never sees. I look up to that man. He did an amazing job with that.
No, I will say he created one of the best freaking movie series ever made.
Yeah,
those three. Originals, those are some of the best sci-fi movies ever made. But
a global
those,
phenomenon, bro.
But those other three, sometimes I'm just like,
why, George?
George, just, you know, I, because nobody wants to hate those. I don't want to hate them.
I don't want to hate them either. Like I tried to convince myself that I liked at least one of them, and then the more I watched it, I realized how much I didn't like them. Like. I didn't want to hate him. You don't know how hard it is for me to just outright say I didn't like a Star Wars movie. Like, that's so hard for me to say, dude.
And you know, I went to the first Phantom Menace when it came out in theaters. My dad ate all my licorice, so I wasn't too thrilled about that. But he was so bored he ate all my fucking licorice.
Yeah.
But, you know, and yeah. It's one of those things, yeah. You know, I really, as a kid, I really enjoyed the original three. Mm. And then you go to see that, and it just ends up being a lot of political speech and just kind of pacing's horrible. And, you know, and when we revisited that, like, I hadn't watched that movie since I was probably like 11, 12.
Mm-hmm.
When we revisited it for the review, it didn't get any better. Like, no. Usually, you know, like, things are usually better in your childhood, like Yoo-hoo's and other shit. No, it didn't get no better.
Yeah, it's tough, man. And like, you know, like, I feel like people who they probably listen, they're like, God, man, but these guys like the new ones. Like, you don't know how hard it is for me to say that I don't like a Star Wars movie. That's like, I want to love everything Star Wars, but just those three, I can't, man, I can't. But onto other things. George R. R. Martin reveals 5 new facts about HBO's Game of Thrones prequel. Brad, you had a lot of questions about this prequel. What will be happening in it? It looks like George dished out some stuff to Entertainment Weekly. Not Lucas, George R. R. Martin.
It's nice to know he's going around doing these interviews instead of writing his fucking book.
Yeah, I'm writing a fucking book, but you know.
George R. R. Martin does not want to finish that book at all.
Look, let's go ahead and read these 5 facts. Westeros is divided into roughly 100 kingdoms in the prequel. We talk about the 7 kingdoms of Westeros. There were 7 kingdoms at the time of Aegon's conquest, Martin says. But if you go back further, there were 9 kingdoms. There are 12 kingdoms. Eventually, you get back to where there are 100 kingdoms. Petty kingdoms, and that's the era we're talking about here. The 7 kingdoms maintained some degree of order, at least until war broke out. So it sounds like Westeros could be even more dangerous and chaotic and lawless than it is in GOT. Like Wild West Westeros.
Can I just say that, you know, I think people had a hard enough time with the 7 kingdoms.
Mm-hmm.
The fuck are we? We gonna remember all this shit about 100.
There are Starks.
What the fuck?
There are Starks and direwolves. The pack survives. This should be obvious given the time period the Starks were descended from the first men. But in case there was any doubt, Martin confirms his fan-favorite family is around. The Starks will definitely be here, he said. And while much has been made about the fact that the prequel predates dragons, that doesn't mean there won't be other creatures. Obviously, the White Walkers are here, or as they're called in my books, the others, and that will be an aspect of it, Martin says. There are things like direwolves and mammoths. Also, what's it called? If you go back to a certain Stark during this time, it's Brandon Stark, Brand the Builder, who created the wall.
Can't wait for that children's cartoon show, Brand the Builder.
We can fix it.
I would have said, Clint.
We don't want no devils in the house. We want the Lord. There will not be any Lannisters, at least not at first. The prequel predates the rise of the Lannister family, Martin says, but there is another family currently residing in the future Lannister homestead. The Lannisters aren't there yet, but Castle Rock is certainly there. It's the Rock of Gibraltar, he says. It's actually occupied by the Casterlys, for whom it's still named after the time of Game of Thrones. The Casterlys were supposedly swindled from their homestead by Lan the Clever, who founded House Lannister, though it's unclear if it's the tale that will be told in the prequel. It's a true ensemble. HBO's cast breakdown has appeared to suggest the show might lead with a trio of female leads, Naomi Watts, Naomi Ackie, and Denise Go. Asked about this, Martin said the prequel, like Game of Thrones, is more accurately described as an ensemble story. I hesitate to use the word lead, Martin says. As you know, for Game of Thrones, we never even nominated anybody for lead actress or lead actor during award season. Until recently, it was always for supporting categories because the show is such an ensemble. I think that will be true for this show, too. We don't have leads to make as large an ensemble cast.
But you know you're going to have some strong female presence in this. Which I think a lot of people liked about Game of Thrones.
Yeah.
Is some of the best characters to watch. They were the females.
Yeah. Cersei, Dany.
Arya.
Sansa. Yeah. Yara. Elia Martell. Yeah. I could go off more characters. The final fact here, guys. The show might get a slightly different title than the one you're expecting. The prequel is still officially untitled, Martin emphasizes. In the past, the author has suggested the title, The Long Night. One behind-the-scenes factor that complicated this choice is that the third episode of Game of Thrones Season 8 is also titled The Long Night. While The Long Night remains Martin's preferred title, there is a similar possibility being considered. I heard a suggestion that it could be called The Longest Night, which is a variant that I wouldn't mind. He says that would be pretty good. While Martin has many projects in the works, including the prequel pilot, he notes he's currently only writing one thing, the sixth Ice and Fire novel, The Winds of Winter.
Oh, shit, he's out doing these interviews. You know he ain't writing shit.
You're on shit, bro. He's cashing in checks. Look,
man ain't writing.
I mean, for you, that you were kind of confused as to what we could be covering, did this give you a little bit more coverage of what you think you're going to be able to see?
Well, I kind of figured, you know, if we're going back that far, I kind of figured it wasn't going to be a huge built-up kingdoms that we got in Game of Thrones. I kind of figured it'd be more like fiefdoms or even more like just Dothraki hordes all over the place just warring with each other. So that's kind of what it's looking like. It's kind of looking like this is the very beginning.
Yeah, I can't wait, man, because, you know, spoiler alert for people who don't want to hear this, just skip around. The Children of the Forest were the ones who created the White Walkers by creating the Night King. And what's it called? They created them because the First Men were, what's it called? They were not having the best time with the First Men. And then they ended up having to, you know, join together. So then when the Age of Heroes also happened, there was so many different people that were coming up that were trying to, you know, basically take control of the land. So it's going to be really interesting to see what they're going to talk about this time. And especially because you have the Children of the Forest, which is a really, really interesting group that we got a little bit of in the series, but not that much in this one. And not that much as where we can say that we know everything about the Children of the Forest.
Yeah, so it's going to be a chance to go back and kind of give a little bit more detail on how things came about in Game of Thrones.
Mm-hmm. Look, man, my vision for this is that it's like a 9-season prequel, man. I mean, we start with the early stuff, and then we hit, you know, the fall of Valyria, and what's it called? And then what's it called? The Dance of Dragons, and then we basically just end with Robert's Rebellion.
Yeah, probably. That's probably how it's going to end.
Yeah, man. So that was it, man. That's the news for the week, and I really hope everybody had a wonderful time listening. Hopefully everybody's having a good Monday. But for now, we got to go ahead and go into the housekeeping of it all. So you ready for that?
I'm ready.
All right. All right. If you did enjoy this episode, make sure you leave a rating review on your podcast app of choice. It really does help the feed grow. Also, follow the Nerdcore on Twitter at the Nerdcore _, Instagram at the Nerdcore, Facebook page, the Nerdcore Pods. Also, join the Facebook group, the Nerdverse, the official Nerdcore group, to talk about all things nerd, and we love you if you would join. Also, go and help us out by supporting the Patreon at patreon.com/Nerdcore, CORPS, and have some fun with the tiers that we offer on there. Also, shout out to our executive producers, Grayson Barker, 98 on Instagram, order him at 98 on Twitter. Thank you, Grayson, for being great and a great, great, great executive producer of the podcast, along with Journey, who you can follow on Twitter at icemocha_Jorn, J-O-U-R-N. Brett, tell us about Shane.
You can follow our friend Shane at twitch.tv/SRRKK, or follow him on Twitter at SRRKKTwitch.
Sorry, I was drinking water because I did that kind of fast. So, with that being said, it's been a wonderful time, and we will see you for tomorrow's review of The Hateful Eight, which I did end up already starting it, okay? So don't, you know, won't be late for this one, okay?
We'll see.
All right. But we'll see you guys tomorrow when we review Red Dead Redemption 2. Brad, send him into the podcast void.
All right, bro. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to all our Patreon out there, all our listeners. We truly appreciate it. And I guess in the next episode, we talk about Samuel Jackson's dingus. Young Yoda out.